Hey everybody, this is Joey Fite from thephysicaleducator.com. Welcome back to the Phys Ed Show podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about how to rest like a rock star. Let's get into it. All right. Hi, everybody. I hope you're doing great. Thank you so much for tuning back into the Phys Ed Show podcast. Before we get into today's episode, I just got two quick little things that I want to talk about. First of all, back on September 21st, I promised somebody that I was going to be dedicating the next episode of this show to her, and I'm pretty sure that she probably forgot, but I did not. So Jenny B, if you're out there listening, this episode's for you. So if you're listening, I'm not sure if you follow Jenny yet. Jenny's Twitter handle is at JennyTeachesPE. And Jenny is one of the most caring and intentional physical educators that I've ever met. Jenny is wildly invested into her own professional growth, and she just continuously is looking for opportunities for her to continue to learn so that she can best serve her students. Jenny was the first teacher to register for PhysEdU, and I'm just so grateful that I've had that opportunity to get to know her better, to learn alongside her, and to have her join in the events and everything and just bring all of the energy that she brings to everything she does. So Jenny, I just want to say a huge thank you. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for giving it a shout out on Twitter. And I can't wait to keep learning with you in the future. Now, the second thing I want to talk about before we dive in here is PhysEdU, the membership-based professional growth community that I quietly launched back in June and have been dedicating most of my energy and attention to ever since. For years, I've had teachers ask me to consider starting a membership site for thephysicaleducator.com just to make it easier for them to be able to access the resources that I create and share there. Now, like most things I do, I took my time exploring options and intentionally designing something that was innovative and that tied into my vision of every child on the planet having access to effective, meaningful physical education. PhysEdU's purpose is to help you unlock and grow your potential to be an outstanding physical educator. I'm so incredibly passionate about the project, and the community that we are building there is thriving and it's exciting, and I just love being surrounded by all those teachers. I really hope that you'll consider joining us on campus. There are a variety of membership options, each with its own set of benefits. And these benefits include everything from access to exclusive posts and content and members-only events to things like workshops and brand new games database, and of course, instant access to all of the premium resources that you find on thephysicaleducator.com. If you'd like to learn more and see if PhysEdU is a good fit for you, visit thephysicaleducator.com/membership. Again, that's thephysicaleducator.com/membership. All right, let's get into today's episode. Now, I know that at the top of the show, I told you that this episode is going to be about rest, but really what this episode's about is one of the best feelings in the world. What I'm talking about is momentum. Now, momentum is a very fleeting feeling. It's like that perfect wave that you've been waiting for all morning when you're out surfing. And when it finally comes and you're able to catch it, you just feel like a rock star out there. But the thing is that once it's done, all you want is to get that feeling again. As teachers, we surf momentum whenever we get the chance. We ride it out to catch up on email, to enter student data, to plan projects, and do all the other things we've always said we would do once we, quote unquote, have extra time. Now, one of the dangers of momentum is that the high that it produces and then it makes you feel when you experience it, it oftentimes has us teachers fall back into our default yes mode. So tell me if any of these sound familiar. Yes, I can plan that field trip. Yes, I can take that duty. Yes, I'd love to be on that committee. Yes, let's schedule a meeting then. You know, for people who claim to love momentum, us teachers, we sure love killing it. Maybe it's not the momentum itself that we're so good at killing, but really it's the conditions that contribute to our being able to experience momentum when we need it most. So what I'd like to do here in this episode is kind of explore what momentum is and then talk about some of those conditions that can support it so that we can better design our lives in order to make sure that we're able to find that wave when we need it. Okay, so first off, let's define momentum. Momentum is the feeling we get from experiencing a series of wins over a period of time. When we make meaningful progress towards a goal, our brain rewards us with dopamine. And as we continue to make progress, we continue to receive dopamine. Being the feel-good slash driving neurochemical that it is, not to mention its effects on things like focus and learning and motivation, dopamine is what causes us to experience the high of momentum, the surging sense of confidence, competence, and invincibility that we love to feel. Now that said, momentum can't last forever. Eventually, the steam that we found ourselves full of, it condenses back down to the water that it was, and we return back to our normal state. Listen, that's okay. We're not made to live in this state of infinite momentum at all times. And trying to force the feeling into staying can only have the opposite effect. What we can do, though, is work on creating the conditions in which momentum is most likely to flourish whenever we need it. In his book, The Art of Impossible, Stephen Kotler discusses momentum and its role in supporting flow. Now, remember, flow is that sensation of when time kind of starts slipping away and you feel your best and you're able to perform your best. Throughout his book, Kotler identifies a few key conditions that are required not only to experience momentum, but that also make its return more favorable. The first of those conditions is to set the right kind of goals. Now, when we think about the goals that we're setting for ourselves, we need to keep two key factors in mind. The first is how important those goals are to us, and the second is how attainable the goals that we've set for ourselves really are. To experience momentum, we need to be working on goals that we've identified as being important to us, which means that the goals have to align with our passion and our purpose. This is why slipping into that yes mode can be such a momentum killer, because it makes it too easy to add goals to our plates that are not truly important to us. When we start to feel forced into working on goals that don't align with our passion and purpose, we lose our momentum. Now, also, when it comes to goals, their importance isn't the only factor that influences how likely they are to help us experience momentum. We also need to consider how attainable they are. Working towards a goal or a collection of goals that feels too hard can cause stress, and stress can be a great momentum killer, as I'm sure you've all experienced at some point in your teaching career. This doesn't mean that we should set easy goals for ourselves. It just means that we need to find the sweet spot between challenge and mastery. Again, the yes mode can really hurt us here. In that high state of momentum that I was describing earlier, our beliefs in regard to our own abilities might be a little inflated. We wind up saying yes to everything that gets thrown our way in this period of like self-perceived invincibility. The next thing you know, you wake up with a momentum hangover, with a ton of tasks on your to-do list that you just don't really care about, and a growing sense of dread in your heart. You've taken on too much, your goals list is now out of your reach, and all you want to do is either hide underneath a rock or queue up that next episode of your favorite show. Now, we could talk about goals forever, and that's honestly a whole other podcast, and if you're interested in that podcast, I'd be happy to record it. I will say that over on PhysEdU, I wrote a big post and I just hosted a workshop on how to leverage your neurochemistry to cultivate passion and purpose in your life. And like I said, a lot of that we know about goal setting has to do with making sure that our goals are aligned to our passions and purpose. So if you are on PhysEdU, go ahead and check that out in the watching space. You can watch the workshop there, or you can read about it in the reading space. And if you're not on PhysEdU, well, here's a great reason for you to go ahead and join. Now, let's talk about the other condition that can help us maintain momentum in our life. So making sure that we're setting goals that are important and attainable is one part of the recipe that helps create the conditions for momentum. The other part that Kotler writes about is rest. Now, here's the thing. Rest isn't something that teachers are great at. Somewhere along the line, we've been programmed to believe that our quote-unquote downtime should be used as catching up time, a time to read books, to work on projects, to attend workshops, or get some planning done. We're also constantly made to feel guilty for the actual rest that is built into our schedule. How many times have you heard somebody say, like, oh, it must be great being a teacher. You get your summers off. The thing is, rest is essential to momentum. Without it, our bodies and minds eventually start wearing down and will eventually break unless we learn to ease off that gas pedal. By refusing to rest, we put ourselves in a situation where our performance starts to degrade, both at a cognitive and at a physical level. This makes everything just seem harder than it should be and makes it so much more difficult to experience the wins that serve as the foundation of momentum. Now, one thing that's important to know is that not all rest is created equal. Kotler describes two types of recovery, passive recovery and active recovery. We engage in passive recovery when we sit down in front of the TV or just mindlessly scroll through our social media timelines. Passive recovery is an escape. It's not an action plan. We engage in it not so much to rest and recover, but because we can't bring ourselves to face whatever project or problem is sucking away at our souls. That's why we're often left feeling like crap when we finally snap out of the trance that passive recovery has put us in. Time has passed, we still feel exhausted, and the problems that we were trying to avoid are still there. Now, active recovery is the opposite. It's a proactive, intentional rest strategy that allows us to recoup and reset. I'm quoting Kotler here directly from the book, but active recovery ensures that the brain stays off and the body can mend. By flushing stress hormones from the system and shifting brainwaves into alpha first and then delta later, active recovery practices allow us to reset. There are three research-backed steps that one can follow to engage in active recovery. Now, the first one here should come as a surprise to no one. It's sleep. Sleep is our body's built-in recovery program. Despite our unnatural ability to ignore it or hamper its impact, sleep is actually hardwired into our system to allow us to recover, grow, and learn. At all costs, we need to protect our sleep and ensure that we're doing our best to adopt healthy habits that align with good sleep hygiene. Failing to do so is a surefire way to set ourselves up for an unhealthy lifestyle and ruin our chances of quickly finding the momentum we need when we need it. Now, I'm not going to get into sleep any further than that, but I will say that I'll leave some links in the show notes to some interesting podcasts and resources that can help you learn more about how you can be improving your sleep habits. I also want to say here, in full disclosure, sleep is something that I struggle with. And it's something that I'm actively working on improving in my own life. Some of the things that I'm currently trying out in terms of sleep is I'm making sure that I'm avoiding all screens at least an hour before bed. And the way I'm doing that is I'm reading fiction before falling asleep. I dim the lights down in my room when I'm getting ready for bed. And also one thing that I picked up from Angie Huberman is when I wake up in the morning, I try to expose myself to sunlight as early as possible. Apparently that just helps with the whole regulation of your circadian rhythm and helps time it with all the other systems that are kind of happening within your body that are trying to cue you to essentially wake up, but also set the timer for you falling asleep about 16 hours later. Like I said, it's a work in progress. I'm monitoring my data. Okay, I'm sleeping with my Apple Watch. I'm doing all that kind of stuff. That said, if you're somebody who has had success in terms of improving the quality of your sleep, I'd love to know what you did that led to that success. So hit me up on Twitter with a couple suggestions. I'm totally in guinea pig mode right now. Okay. Even this morning, you know, like I got up really early and I went for a walk right away because apparently exercise first thing helps clear out the adenosine in your body. Anyways, I'm trying everything out. I want to try it all out. I want to find something that works and then I'll record something about that later on. Okay. So if you got suggestions, hit me up on Twitter. Okay, so sleep is one of the steps you can take to engage in that active recovery. The second thing that Kotler writes about are active recovery protocols, or ARPs. An active recovery protocol involves mindful activities that give your body a chance to recover by flushing out stress hormones and shifting your brainwaves into recovery mode. And I'll leave a little link to an article on brainwaves in the show notes. Examples of ARPs include restorative yoga sessions, light hiking in natural areas, which can also be considered as forest bathing, Epsom salt baths, or if you're feeling super fancy, a sauna. As you practice your activity of choice, enjoy the physical recovery that it brings and use that as an opportunity to practice mindfulness. So for example, the other morning I decided I needed some rest. So instead of going into a passive recovery protocol, I went out for a walk. My intention was to walk 2 to 3 kilometers and come back and get back to work. It was a beautiful fall day. I wound up walking 12 kilometers. Okay. I love walking. And I started the walk off listening to a podcast because, you know, I'm always trying to stay in that like multitasking. I am in a productivity machine kind of mode. And what I'm recognizing now as I grow older and wiser is that time to rest is for resting. So I started listening to that podcast while I was walking. And then at one point, just decided to tune it off and be really mindful of my surroundings. There was a ton of birds around me. Okay. There was all kinds of wind and all kinds of stuff going on in the fields beside me. I'm on this beautiful trail. I'm enjoying the fall colors. And when I got back, I felt like in a completely different mindset. So whatever active recovery protocol you decide to adopt, schedule time for it into your weekly calendar and make that time sacred. After all, this scheduled recovery time has the power to be your best defense against burnout and the key to be able to perform at your absolute peak, okay? Try to see if you can schedule just two active recovery protocols into your weekly schedule. Maybe it's a yoga session and a walk, whatever you want to pair it up. But see how dedicating yourself to those times, making sure that nothing interferes with them, see the impact that it has in terms of your energy levels and how you feel you're recovering from really strenuous days or challenging moments in your career. Okay, so let's be real here for a second. No matter how mindful you are about rest and recovery, there is always a chance that you find yourself running on empty. I've always found that the days after submitting my report cards or running field day or speaking at a conference leave me feeling a little hazy and delusional. I can be pretty quick to snap during those times and my willpower is like all but gone. This feeling comes from being depleted, either physiologically, psychologically, or both. When we get to that stage, our regular active recovery protocols may not be enough to help lift us out of it. This is why we need to think ahead and have a total reset plan in place, which is the third step of getting the kind of rest that's going to support momentum. Think of your total reset plan as a one-person wellness retreat. The goal is to completely step away from your everyday environment and put a hard stop to the autopilot mode that you've been living in that led to you running on empty. Maybe you have a cottage or a favorite Airbnb you can get away to. Maybe there's an overnight hike that you enjoy. Whatever your getaway of choice is, the goal is simple. Step away from your normal, turn your rest dial up to high, and turn your stimuli dial down to low. Okay, so we'd obviously all love to imagine a life where we can just slip away on a whim's notice and get the rest that we need. But the reality is that isn't the case for most people. This is why you should consider creating a total reset plan blueprint, and if necessary, a partner agreement that will help reduce the friction between you thinking, oof, I need a break, and actually taking that break. Okay, so let me share a little bit from my life. So earlier this summer, when I was learning all about this stuff, I was talking to my wife about it because I wanted to make sure that we were creating a total reset plan for her, because she was about to embark on a whole new adventure as an educator. After 10 plus years of teaching grades 3 and 4 exclusively, this year she's in a K-1 classroom. Now, one of her biggest concerns with making this jump was that she was worried that her new students will demand so much energy of her that she won't have any energy left to play with our own kids when she gets home. So aside from making some changes in terms of how we divide and conquer as a parenting tag team, we've also started to look into establishing some active recovery protocols and a total reset plan. The idea is that by baking rest and recovery into her weekly schedule, we can help her continue to feel great and maintain her energy levels so that she can enjoy our own kids when she gets home from taking care of other people's kids all day, as opposed to just crashing as soon as she gets home, which is her fear. So with some active recovery protocols in place, our focus was on developing a total reset plan. And this is a work in progress, but I want to share here to serve as an example of all the things we're planning and taking into consideration to reduce any friction that can get in the way of her getting the rest and recovery that she needs when she needs it. What I really want to highlight here is that as a couple with a couple of kids, including a blueprint schedule for both partners helps take away one of the biggest sources of friction when it comes to implementing your total reset plan, which is guilt. The idea of picking up and leaving for the weekend, despite it being for the best possible reasons, can bring up enough sensations of guilt that you might not feel comfortable implementing your plan. By having details already mapped out for what your spouse and your kids, for those who are in a family situation like mine, what those people get up to while you're away, you can reduce those feelings of guilt and get away when you need to. So here's like a very basic outline of my wife's total reset plan. So this was designed for a weekend away. So on the Thursday night, okay, so ahead of time, she's going to book an Airbnb in a cute little town not too far away from ours that she knows of and that she loves. On the Friday night, she's going to pack her total reset plan bag. So this is like a list that's already pre-created and includes everything from clothes to toiletries to a cooler bag for groceries and all that kind of stuff. On Saturday at 7 a.m., so we have it hour by hour here, she can get up, make coffee, play with the boys for an hour once they wake up. On Saturday at 8, she's going to depart for the town. At 9 a.m., she arrives in the town, she goes for a coffee at this awesome little coffee shop that's there, and she reads for an hour. At 10, she walks the shops around town, and at 12, she goes to lunch at one of our favorite restaurants in the place. At 1, there's a trail along the water that's easy hiking, so she's going to engage in a hike on that trail, get some sights in, and get some fresh air. At 2, she gets to check into the Airbnb and have a little nap. At 3, she's going to do some gratitude journaling. 4, she's got a puzzle and a podcast. Okay, she's a huge true crime freak and nothing that's going to be work-related. At 6, she's going to go grab supper at our favorite restaurant there. At 7, she's going to return to the Airbnb and engage in some restorative yoga. At 8, she's going to call a friend and catch up. 9, she's reading in bed. And at 10, she's off to sleep. 7 a.m. the next morning, she can do some morning yoga and some journaling again. 8 a.m., breakfast and yet another podcast. 9, she's going for coffee at that awesome coffee shop and she reads there for an hour while she enjoys her coffee. 10, she packs up at the Airbnb. 10:30, she walks the trail along the water one more time, and then at 11:30, she departs for home, and at 12:30, she's back home staying with us. So that's what the total reset plan looks like on her side. But like I said, it's hard to go out and do all those things when you're constantly worried, like, what are the kids doing at home? Is Joey okay? And, you know, like he's chasing these kids around the house, and I'm out here resting. So the idea is to plan what I'm going to do here at home so that we can remove some of the guilt associated with her getting away and resetting. So on my side, on the Thursday night, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out, I'm going to go buy groceries for the weekend for both at home, but also for Jess's getaway, okay, to make sure that she's got everything she needs so that she's got snacks and whatnot while she's there. And again, this is a checklist that we've already prepared, so there's no like decision making involved. You want to think about the state you're going to be in when you need to implement this plan, because chances are you're not going to be working at like your full brain capacity. So the more work you can kind of front load, the easier it's going to be to implement your plan. On Friday night, I prep the kids' outfits for the weekend. Okay, so getting the two boys dressed in the morning is a WWE match almost every day. So having the clothes good and ready to go is always a big help. Saturday at 7 a.m., I make pancakes for the boys. At 8 a.m., I get the boys dressed and we play. At 9 a.m., I take the boys to the Miner's Marsh here in Kentville so we can go birding and critter dipping. And if it's a rainy day, we have an alternative. So I'm going to muddy buddy them up, which is their little rain suits, and we can go puddle jumping. At 10 a.m., we're back to the house for a mid-morning snack and a little bit of arts and crafts. At 12, we make sandwiches for lunch and we eat and then we do a little bit independent playtime, okay? Building with blocks or anything like that. My kids are really into magnet tiles these days. At 12:30, it's nap time for the little one and the older one can have a movie. At 3 p.m., we do some backyard activities. So we can do some gardening, play soccer, go on bug hunts, build a snow fort if it's snowy outside, play for Hot Wheels, or just play on the porch if it's raining or if it's snowy outside. At 4 p.m., we do quiet time activities, so books and puzzles and, again, magnet tiles. At 5:30, we have pasta supper because it's a no-brainer and it's easy for me to get through as a dad. At 6 p.m., we have a dance party, which is a regular occurrence in our household. At 7 p.m., I put the little guy down for bed, and then I read some books with the older kid. At 8 p.m., I put the older kid down for bed, and at 9 p.m., I'm reading in bed, possibly passing out. And then Sunday at 7 a.m., we have an easy breakfast, okay? So just some yogurt, maybe some toast. At 8 a.m., I get the boys dressed. We have playtime. At 9 a.m., we bike to the KCA school here in Kentville. We play at the park, and I make sure I bring some snacks, and those snacks have already been prepared on the Friday night. And if it's rainy outside, we can muddy up and go puddle jumping or go play in the brook nearby. At 10 a.m., we're back at the house for mid-morning snack and more arts and crafts. At 12 p.m., we make sandwiches for lunch, eat, and then independent playtime. And then again at 12:30, it's nap and movie time just before our mom gets home. So again, this might seem intense, right? Like going hour by hour for both partners. But planning everything out like this removes a lot of the guilt out of the equation and lowers the amount of decision making that's required. It might seem like overkill now, but like I said before, when you're operating from a place of exhaustion, you'll be very appreciative that you took the time to lower the cognitive load of getting away when you were still had a 100% brain capacity. So some principles we were trying to follow as we kind of planned this partner total reset plan is make sure that we're limiting the amount of screen time on her behalf. So, you know, screens are great, but oftentimes when we seek out screens, they give us big spikes in dopamine. And when our dopamine spikes and it starts dropping afterwards, it can cause this kind of crash, and that can actually play against your intention of resetting and resting. We also want to include in that total reset plan, we want to make sure that there's a bunch of restorative light physical activity. So again, something that's just going to help flush out those stress hormones that have been accumulating in your body over the last couple of days or weeks, and also include lots of opportunities to practice mindfulness. So that's why, you know, the eating meals alone, the journaling, the walking, the doing puzzles, reading, all those things are ways for you to stay super focused on the here and now so that your brain isn't just wandering all over the place, engaging kind of stressful thinking. So that's what our total reset plan is. So those three steps to rest, to be able to rest like a rock star, to get the kind of rest and recovery that you need to be able to set the conditions that are going to empower you to experience momentum in your life. Those three steps, sleep, active recovery protocols, total reset plans. By baking all of these forms of rest into your weekly schedule and having an action plan in place for when things become overwhelming, you can avoid having to run on empty for prolonged periods of time. Doing so helps you feel your best, it helps you avoid burnout, and it allows you to continue to chase your goals with all of the momentum that you need to achieve them. For many, the idea of intentional rest may be completely foreign to them. To help those who fall into that category, I'd love for you to share on Twitter what active rest protocols you intend to plan into your schedule for this upcoming school year. The more options that we have at our disposal, the more likely we are to be able to find something that sticks. And by working together as a community to share ideas and suggestions, we can help us all perform at our very best and work together on, again, just raising that bar for physical education across the globe. So that's it for today's episode of the Phys Ed Show podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoy episodes like this, let me know. Okay, it was a little bit different, didn't talk specifically about teaching, and I will make sure that we're focused more on Phys Ed in the future episodes. But one of the core tenets of Phys Ed U is helping teachers develop their capacity to live as full-stack physical educators. And what a full-stack physical educator is, it's a teacher who not only feels empowered in their teaching, but a teacher who also understands how to cultivate motivation in their life, and most importantly, a teacher who's able to prioritize their health, to take care of their physiology, take care of their psychology, so that they're in the best possible place to be the best versions of themselves as teachers. So if you'd like to learn more about being a full stack physical educator, and if you'd like to join a community that's based around that, again, feel free to go check out thephysicaleducator.com/membership and find the right membership for you to join PhysEdU. I'd absolutely love to have you on campus, and I guarantee you that once you're there, you're going to have a good time. So once again, my name is Joey Fite from thephysicaleducator.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and happy teaching.